The Drowned Detective, written by Neil Jordan and read by Mark Meadows.
Chapter 1. It was odd, I thought, as we followed the government minister in his caravan of black Mercedes 4x4s, how often a spouse is abandoned for a less attractive alternative. This minister, for example, this ghostly presence behind tinted windows, had a wife who had hired us to trace her husband's movements, a woman whose fragrance filled the drab office we worked in, providing a welcome relief from the odour of links that came from the desk beside me. She was petite. Her prematurely grey hair was dyed a subtle mix of blonde and silver. She was moneyed, of course, immaculately dressed in some designer's outfit I should have known by name. Chanel, Armani, Xenia, Azedine Alaya. They always sounded like species of rare plant, these designer names. Plants I should have known. Anyway, she was clad in one of them and sat on the rickety chair, and there was no denying she must have once been beautiful. She still was, by anyone's standards, a beauty that would only be accentuated by that march of tiny lines, those creases of worry round the eyelids that soon, as she explained her all-too-familiar predicament, became wet with tears. He was seeing, she believed, someone who lived in a small apartment above a neon sign that spelled out Vulcanizace in large and vulgar letters. Vulcanization, Frank had translated, and he seemed to share the client's distaste of the word, its implications and whatever was the process. He conversed then in his native tongue with István, who generally sat in the inner room, listening for any titbits he could gauge from our increasingly tart conversations, and they repeated the word several times between themselves. Vulcanizace. Vulcan, I thought. The Roman god of fire. And I remembered those tyre repair outfits along the Harrow Road. And we eventually came to the bitter conclusion that her husband, the government minister, was severely compromising his security by seeing a woman who lived above a tyre repair shop. István readied his telephoto lens, and Frank guided the vehicle into the outside lane. They had a procedure, these bulked-up merchants of Mercedes 4MATIC all-wheel drives, when they came to a junction. One blocked off the middle lane, while the ministerial vehicle sped inside it, the others following hard at the rear. It looked impressive, and sounded more so, with much screeching of tyres and blaring of outraged horns. But Frank glided the van round the whole circus quite neatly, took advantage of the chaos to execute a U-turn, and parked in a shadowed alleyway on the other side. We could see the sign from there. Vulcanizace. The three dark-windowed 4MATICs mounting the pavement below it. There was a woman in the dim interior with a large tyre in her hands. She was dressed in an old denim jumpsuit, with luxuriant red hair spilling round her oil-smudged shoulders. She not only lived above the tyre shop, we realised then, she worked in it as well. And as the neatly dressed, diminutive figure emerged from the ministerial car, flanked by two bulky, dark-suited minders, István clicked his unblimped camera, and all three of us wondered what the attraction could be.
"Maybe she vulcanizes him," said Frank in his almost perfect English. "Covers him in rubber."
"Circus tricks," muttered István. And I remembered what fun it used to be, and thought it best to leave them to it. There were issues now that diminished the enjoyment, and I could see Frank's cufflinks gleaming against the gear handle. I remembered the tears of the attractive wife. I understood her jealousy all too well. I had a Polaroid photo in my pocket and an appointment with Gertrude. I slid back the rear door and said I was off and asked them to keep it discreet. I knew they would. They were professionals, after all.